It is after 8 p.m. It's our Thought Leader Thursday segment on this Thursday, and our thought leader on this Thursday is certainly relevant for some of the outcomes that we've seen over the last day or so. The CEO of the South African Cities Network is our thought leader on this Thursday, and the Cities Network is an established network of South African cities and partners who encourage the exchange of information and experiences and best practices on city management and urban development. Much of the issues, at least of all in many of our metros, that the last polls have been contested over. His name is Sithole Mbanga, and he's certainly been in the local and cooperative governance space for many years, and he joins us this evening as our thought leader. Mhlekazi Masikwamkele, good evening and welcome.
Good evening to your listeners. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you very much for taking time out to join us. Before we get, I guess, into the detail of the work that the Cities Network does, let's maybe just start and get a brief background of who Sithole Mbanga is, and more importantly, I guess, how you made your way into this area of cooperative governance, you know, municipal partnership, city management, urban resilience, and many of the other things that you work on.
Wow. Okay. So thanks again, Mbanga. But let me just be brief. I am a former student activist. I was at the Durban Westville University, and part and parcel of my experience in student activism led me in an interest in the area of governance, particularly public governance. Whilst I was at KZN, I started working for a number of NGOs there, that were interested in democracy and governance systems, the DASA, the Institute for Multi-Party Democracy, the National Business Initiative. And I just happened to be fortunate enough to be drawn into the first cohort of people that were tasked to put together this animal that today we have to contend with as municipalities in the area of governance, called the Integrated Development Plan. So I was fortunate enough to have been part and parcel of those people that conceptualized how would municipalities go about managing these institutions once they have been given birth by democracy. How would they go about the function of changing our municipalities and cities from erstwhile racialized spaces into ones that are more inclusive, that are not much non-racial, but are really working for all South Africans. And I suspect the rest is history, because thereafter I was quickly brought into what used to be the Department of Provincial and Local Government, and at it, part and parcel of what I had to work with as part and parcel of the local government transition process was to look at how would these institutions become learning institutions. And that's where the idea of putting together a cities network or a local government network that is focused on learning got to be formulated.
I'm quite interested in that moment, because I guess in a way it frames a lot of you know, the latter work of the Cities Network, but also some of the issues that we faced with now, with the elections as a backdrop. Talk to me about that time. I mean, designing a new system that wasn't there before. What kind of considerations were front and center there? And when you look at, you know, what you came up with then, and even the white paper then, and where we are now, some of your own reflections on that.
So I think for me, the one thing that never escapes my mind when I think about that period was the character of the types of human beings that were involved in that exercise. You had people that had governed municipalities before, that had governed under the old apartheid system, and you also had the enthusiasm that was brought by people that came from civil society organizations that were very much interested, I mean, in how it is that civility ought to exist. And then you also had hardcore political people that came from outside of organizations such as the United Democratic Front, particularly those that were in exile. So it was a good mixture of people. But I think the most important thing across all of them, I must say, that they seem all to display a common thing, which is commitment to South Africa. So it was not just about being part and parcel of the local government negotiations leading into the white paper on local government, but it was also very committed people. So it went beyond just participating. So that's the one thing. But front and center of the debate was, how do we make our country non-racial? How do we make the ordinary citizen feel recognized as being part and parcel of a contributor in whatever space and in whatever role that they have? I mean, one of the things that is informs, for instance, our revenue mechanism as a country is a progressive tax system, right? That says everybody pays tax. Even unemployed people, by the way, pay tax, right? Because we all pay value-added tax. So in one way or the other, even if you're unemployed, you still contribute to the revenue streams of the country, however little it might be, and therefore it differs depending on what level of the income strata you are. So that was the one thing that I think was there. I remember we came out of types of sloganeering that spoke about a one city, one tax base. And the point that was being expressed at that point in time is that we are all contributing to the growth of a city. You could be coming from a rural hinterland coming into the city. Once you are there, your actions by their very nature contribute to the revenue base, therefore to the economy, and therefore to the gross domestic product of the region that you are located in, right? Whether you're taking a ride in a taxi or whether you're buying the most expensive mode of transport, at least like an aeroplane or whatever the case might be, whether you're purchasing a bottle of milk, whether you're pouring petrol, there is some part of your activity that contributes to the GDP. And hence was born then the notion that in one way or the other, given that we are all committed South Africans and are committed to the democratic agenda or to the agenda of democratization, we will all be contributing. And I think those two things still strike me today as things that are of interest in how our democracy, particularly local government democracy, is evolving.
And you know, the work that you do, I guess, gives true expression to this idea of a learning a city administration or a learning urban development framework as it evolves. And yet, you know, many people, I guess, just by not turning up for the vote and effectively showed their dissatisfaction with how many of their, you know, cities are run. And certainly if you think and you add to that the impact of COVID-19 on the sustainability of cities, their ability to offer services, and even, I guess, their financial well-being, it does mean that a lot of what was worked on then and what was designed then in very well-intentioned ways is consistently might be under threat or I guess, you know, confronted by challenges that, you know, are calling, I guess, are pushing for a different way. I mean, some people are even calling for secession in some parts of the world, in some parts of our country. What do you make of those developments in the context of how cities have evolved, in particular in our eight metros?
I think... Firstly, I think, I mean, if you look at the results as we have them now, what saddens me is the fact that at least half of the voting population did not express how they felt. I think it had, in the sense that informal language speaks, it begins to question the legitimacy of the government that will be running the municipalities. Which is not a good thing for democracy, I must say. I think it calls upon us as a nation to question ourselves, you know, about what is it going to mean. I mean, one of the things that I want to say, and you haven't asked me yet, and that you were going to ask, is what does this thing of coalition mean?
Mm.
And my sense is that I personally do not think that our people, or at least the 50% that have voted, I don't think they are saying the government that must be established at a local government must be coalition government. I have an alternative view, and my view is that I think they are instructing political organizations and civil society organizations and the independents and everybody that is in that political board. They have been instructed to form cooperation government, not coalition government. And I think we need to avoid being blindly trapped into this lexicon of a coalition government. Because even by its very definition, a coalition signifies something that is temporary. Something that in political sloganeering is called unholy, you know, an unholy alliance that is just meant to achieve a short-term objective. And yet I think our people, broadly speaking, are asking for a cooperate as those that will be in power and in offices of government in such a manner that you are able to balance the fact that you must grow the economy, right? At the same time, that economy must be inclusive of poor people.
Sure.
So it shouldn't be four-for-one. So I'm almost ready to almost put together an opinion piece that says the issue here is lack of cooperative government or cooperative government. It's not about coalition government, but that's just my opinion.
And it seems that lack of cooperation is also at times vertical and horizontal. So horizontal between different political parties who have to coddle together an agreement to pass budgets and to get things done, but also between different tiers of government. I mean, we hear about this district development model now as an alignment mechanism, because clearly, you know, local governments and district governments and, you know, provincial administrations and national are sometimes, you know, I guess not working in tandem. And in other cases, Bajongananga's kondos are met.
Yeah. So, and I suspect that to be in competition is the nature of the beast called a human being. Right?
Mm.
I don't think it is intended that there should be competition between, for instance, the various spheres of government,
sure.
The various spheres of governing, the national vis-a-vis province vis-a-vis a local government. I think the intention, and as our constitutional fathers and mothers would have heard it when they thought about the constitution, was that there should be cooperation across all levels of government. Hence, I think it is very intelligent of the current administration to have institutionalized the district development model, because its intention is very clear. And from where I stand, its early evolution is about saying, get your national and provincial governments to start filtering resources to the lowest level in a municipality, if not at a ward level, up to as far down as at a cadastral level. However, I think the fault line for now, anyway, in the DDM, and that is just my opinion, is that I think the DDM assumes that the municipalities are themselves ready,
sure,
to receive those resources that are coming from national and provincial governments, right? On the one axis. But there's also the axis where both the civil society organizations as well as the private sector are ready and willing players in the local government space. So to what extent are municipal governments ready to receive not just the public sector support, but also the private sector support, and also play meaningfully with civil society organizations as well, and look at them as meaningful partners in the government of spaces? I mean, it's a very big question, I think, that is confronting the oncoming administration in the local government space. Not only them, but just generally, there's going to be more focus on how they are going to govern, given the new mandate that they have been given. And as I said before, for me, the mandate is not coalition. I think the mandate for me is cooperate.
Mm.
How do you, it's a cooperative government. So if we are unable to to learn from the past X number of years, 20 years of democratizing local government, that in fact what society has been calling for is cooperation, then there's going to be a big challenge with these new administrations that are coming into office.
Maybe then a last comment. I mean, the emergence of, or re-emergence, I might add, of civics, in whatever form you might want it. I mean, it might be localized based ones, or even the more loose national collective of independence. What do you make of that development? And I guess, you know, is that something that, you know, might potentially contribute to more participatory forms of democracy? I mean, you spoke about your role in the design of integrated development planning.
Don't they remind you of the days of the United Democratic Front?
Well, in some parts,
it was a kaleidoscope of ideas, right? And there was a lot of agility in the system that had been established by liberation movement that was established to confront apartheid head on, right? And I think that was the ingredient of success, right? So I think it's important for us to accept that even independent people, or people that do not want to be associated with political parties per se, they have ideas to contribute. So the question is, how are their ideas going to be assimilated into the IDPs, for instance?
Sure.
So there's still nothing wrong with the integrated development plan or planning as a concept. There's still nothing wrong with putting in place a district development model that seeks to harness all these resources and efforts into a particular space. But the question is, how are these new administrations that are coming into office now going to assimilate ideas for people that otherwise want to be called independent?
Yeah.
And here's my hope, that those independents are not going to fall into the entrapments that their predecessors have had, where power becomes an obsession, right? I think it's also important that they learn from the fact that there were mistakes that were committed previously, in which power seemed, in certain instances anyway, to be the only factor on the table.
So
I think we have to welcome the differentiation. They dilute the decision making. They make the decision making very difficult. But I think that, for me, that should not be the problem. I think the question should be, how are their ideas going to be brought in onto the table, or in a serious way, so that they also feel part and parcel of the transformation process? But of course, there are certain things that I think we shouldn't compromise. I don't think we should compromise the fact that we have to create and transform into a non-racial and an inclusive society. I don't think we should.
Yeah.
So anyone who therefore comes
with
ideas that are contrary to the ideas of inclusivity.
Pause there for me
and
for
a second.
Pause there.
Your music, it gets under your skin. You don't just hear it, you feel it. And now you can taste it. The Extreme Energy Soul and Extreme Energy House. World first innovations, formulated and designed to recreate the full multi-sensorial experience of your favorite Mzansi music. Extreme Energy House and Soul. Taste your music. Now you can taste it. Not for sale to persons under the age of 18. Drink responsibly.
Regent Business School offers a 21st century learning environment to meet the needs of tomorrow's agile business leaders. When you choose Regent, you're choosing a tech-rich, future-focused path to education. With our popular MBAs, higher certificates, postgraduate and undergraduate degree programs, we nurture our students' entrepreneurial mindsets. Online lectures and tutorials for best practice in distance education since 1998. Register now for 2022 at regent.ac.za.
What I'm saying, we have a responsibility, a social responsibility, and that's what's not being talked about. We have a responsibility as people in society, not people above society or away from society, who people are hipper than society, you know what I mean? But people in society whose job is to articulate life and to try to transform it.
It's Thought Leader Thursday. Thought Leader Thursday on Metro FM Talk.
It is indeed, and my thought leader on this Thursday is a chief executive at the South African Cities Network, Mr. Stole Mbanga. And we had to go to the break there, so I wanted you to pause there for a second. But I think it's worth restating what you feel is a non-negotiable as we try and build forward a bit better in our cooperative governance framework. So please just maybe restate that for some of our listeners who might have lost it there as we had to jump to that ad break.
No, I was saying that, I mean, the issues that must not be compromised are issues that are entailed or are articulated in the Constitution, the principles of non-racialism, the principles of humanity, human solidarity, the principles of working together. I mean, most recently, everybody has embraced the slogan of all of society and whole of government, you know, as a different way of talking to how it is that we should be working together rather than working as adversaries, as is the case currently. And hence I'm saying the warning lights for all of us should be there, and we shouldn't be entrapped in this terminology of a coalition government. So the principles of creating a transformed society, it shouldn't make anybody happy that some are affording life and others just cannot. We should all be concerned when some of ours, as South Africans and as global citizens, are unable to afford life. So where life becomes difficult, we should try to make it as easy as possible. So housing is one such thing. Public transportation is one such thing. Energy, in the context of a changing energy complex, how do you make sure that people do have access to energy? Food and food insecurity, education, health, at a time when we are facing a health emergency such as COVID and even others before COVID.
Chagas, we have to leave it there, and we certainly will look forward to that op-ed on cooperation rather than coalition. But I want to thank you for taking time out to speak to us this
evening.
Thanks
very much. Thanks very much, Ebon.
Thank you very much. That there was the CEO of the South African Cities Network, Sithole Mbanga, joining us this evening. And giving us some reflections, certainly from somebody who, when we think about the design of our system, of multiple tiered and one envisages cooperative forms of governance, which are going to be tested during this moment if these results that we've seen are anything to go by. And I would love to hear some of your thoughts on that. We'll take this brief